So you try to be a responsible voter and learn about the candidates. Then there comes a point in every election cycle when it hits you. Oh, heavens, there are judicial races. How do I figure out who these aspiring judges are and who I should vote for? Well, this season, it's particularly important because in Pennsylvania, we'll be electing not one, not two, but three new justices to the state Supreme Court. So we've invited a veteran journalist of the legal profession in to help us sort this out. He's Hank Greslock, the associate publisher and regional editor-in-chief for the Legal Intelligencer. Hank, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
All right. There are only seven justices on the state Supreme Court. Why are we picking three this year?
Well, we're picking three because we've lost two to scandal and we've lost one to retirement. Chief Justice Castile turned the mandatory retirement age at 70, so he was off the court by December. We had Seamus McCaffrey was basically retired, but basically was forced off the court by his Confederates because of, you know, appearance issues.
We're talking about pornographic emails.
The pornographic emails were, got all the attention, but that was probably the least of it. I mean, he'd been under investigation by the Judicial Conduct Board for 2 years because of taking his wife getting referral fees from plaintiff's lawyers. There were questions about whether or not he had made calls on behalf of attorneys to the Philadelphia court system, sort of reaching down and complaining about trial judges and their rulings and cases. And then lastly, Justice Eakin essentially accused him of extortion. And that pushed it to the brink.
Okay, so he's gone, but he will get his pension.
He will get his pension.
And the other vacancy is?
Is courtesy of Joan Ori Melvin, who was indicted and removed from office a couple years ago for essentially using her court staff to do campaign work.
Okay. Give us an idea of why this really matters. What are the issues that this court is going to be addressing?
Well, first, it matters because the court will weigh in on a bevy of issues from and it seems removed from most people. But the reality is they work on meat and potato issues all the time. You know, congressional redistricting. That was something that bounced back and forth. I mean, until the federal court stepped in, Judge Jones, and overruled the Defense Against the Marriage Act, that was headed to the state Supreme Court. I mean, they could have been deciding that. Product liability. When a product goes bad or defective or is alleged to be defective, it can affect a lot of people, mass cases. The court essentially wiped the slate clean at the end of last year and reset the standards. Now, why does that matter? Well, the new rules will apply. It could become more plaintiff-friendly or more defense-friendly depending on how the court rules. So if you're a defective car, defective crib, things like that, these are issues that, you know, how those cases are handled, whether or not it's easier or harder for plaintiffs could be decided by this court.
You wrote a great column in January as this race began about what you think makes a good justice. What should we be looking for?
You want to look for individuals that don't decide the outcome before they've heard this case. Sounds simple enough, but I had an ex-judge once tell me, Hank, you're naive. Most judges know how they're going to rule before, they just figure out how they get there. I don't think that's true. I'm not that cynical, but some judges more so than others, I think they truly independently weigh each case and reach what they think is the proper conclusion. You want to look for people who are very above board in terms of appearance issues, recusing, meaning stepping away from a case when they think there might be an issue about whether or not they can be impartial or whether they can be fair. For instance, if they had a relative who worked for a company or something like that, or they had a financial interest, stepping away. I think, honestly, given the controversy we've had in our court system, you want to look for someone who has a collegial personality, someone who in their campaign is emphasizing collegiality, working on the court. We've had justices in the past very interested in administrative issues and very interested in getting involved in particularly the Philadelphia court system. I think it would be in everyone's best interest if we're electing justices who are more interested in deciding cases than in the day-to-day workings of our court system.
And why would a justice, somebody who's learned it in the law, be so interested in administering a local court system?
It makes you a political heavyweight because of all the jobs at stake.
You pick jobs. You award contracts.
In theory, they would say no, but that's essentially what happens. I mean, it's, you know, in the past we've heard stories about justices and political figures being at odds over who gets to decide those positions. But a cynic would say you can arguably become one of the patronage kings of Philadelphia.
Right. So these guys do get there by being elected. Do they all come as politicians essentially?
I mean, I've been covering the court since 93, and I've seen plenty of indictments and scandals and blowups. I have to say, though, I think most of the justices we've elected over the last 20-some years, most of them aren't politicians. They are judges. They are judges, and they try to do their best. I mean, they have their foibles like everybody else. But I don't know that we've had a whole lot of what I would say hardcore career politicians. And some of the ones that I think were are now gone.
Okay. You sent out a questionnaire to all the candidates. You weren't asking about, you know, cases or,
right.
or legal issues. What did you want to know?
Want to know what their judicial philosophy was. And that was fascinating, just sort of surveying their responses. A lot of the Republicans were quick to say that they believe in the separation of powers and they don't believe in legislating from the bench. And one or two mentioned being a strict constructionist, which means, you know, what they view the Constitution is what it says, that's what it says, and nothing else. The Democrats' answer was kind of interesting too. They more of them were more moderate in their examples. A lot of them went to great pains to say, I'm not an activist, but I'm not a strict constructionist. We asked about that. We asked about whether or not they thought the Judicial Conduct Board should be revamped or revised.
That's the board that essentially disciplines judges.
Right. When the Supreme Court issued their order suspending Justice McCaffrey, one of the things they said was, you know, within 14 – I think it was 14 days or 30 days, we want to either have seen charges brought against Justice McCaffrey or an explanation as to why charges shouldn't be brought. The underpinning of that from what I've heard from most folks is the court was stunned that it was taking them so long. They thought it was fairly clear cut that there were at least appearance issues, that something should have happened. And they wanted to see something happening. So the Judicial Conduct Board was under a lot of scrutiny during the Kids for Cash scandal, Luzerne. They had been alerted to the activities of those judges 3 years before they were indicted, and they did nothing. They did nothing. And the subsequent commission, the Interbranch Commission, investigated, and most of their hearings focused on the foibles of the Judicial Conduct Board. So clearly, most people in the legal field believe that it's a board that hasn't been transparent enough, hasn't ruled effectively, hasn't moved effectively on particularly those who are viewed as politically connected judges. And so we asked about that. And there, that was the widest difference among the respondents. Some thought that absolutely there need to be reforms. A few were sort of like, no, everything's fine.
And what about judges' willingness to recuse themselves, their willingness to refrain from ex parte communications with parties? That sounds like it should be fairly basic and simple.
It should, and yet it's not. And, you know, really the root of all judicial corruption starts with those things. It starts with a refusal to not recusing or ex parte contact. Look, the judges are going to interact with lawyers. They're going to meet them. But I think there's a suspicion at times that shop does get talked. Now, how explicit it is, how not, remains to be seen. Again, I think most judges are ethical. Let me emphasize that. But there's also appearance issues, and that's something that I think judges sometimes miss, but lawyers and the general public understand the inherent potential conflict or how it undermines a court decision when somebody is ruling on something when they have a connection to one of the parties.
If someone wants to see the answers to your questionnaire, are they publicly available?
They're publicly available. You can go to thelegalintelligencer.com, and they're right up there prominently, put on an online-only section, and you have to register, but it's free.
Okay. There are 12 candidates for these three slots because this is the party primary. There will be three winners in the Democratic side, three on the Republican side. We can't talk about all 12
right.
candidates. What are some candidates that stand out who we should know about?
From the Republican field, I think it's interesting. I mean, one is Coryell Stevens. He's an interim justice. He's a unique because usually interim justices usually agree not to run. He's got a strong reputation, was on the Superior Court for a long time, and he's one of those rare Republicans that I think a lot of trial lawyers, plaintiffs bar, feel fairly comfortable with him. They don't feel that he's necessarily defense-oriented. He's definitely one to watch. Another one, and somewhat controversial, is Commonwealth Court Judge Ann Covey. She was not recommended by the Pennsylvania Bar Association, although she had been recommended when she ran for Commonwealth Court originally. But she was involved in the Penn State litigation when Jay Corman was suing the NCAA over the Penn State sanctions.
Corman, the Senate
majority leader. And she made a couple interesting rulings in which she basically forced the NCAA to disclose those emails when they were just, you know, talking about whether or not they had the authority to sandction Penn State over the Sandusky affair. So she's got something she can hang her hat on.
And what about the Democrats?
They have a fairly strong number of strong contenders. Can't fail to mention Kevin Dougherty. He's a very prominent role as the administrative judge for the Philadelphia courts. Ran family court for a long time. Got a lot of recognition for handling the flash mobs, if you remember. Obviously, his brother's John Dougherty, and he has far and away the most money at this point, over $700,000 as of the first reporting period.
Wow. That's John Dougherty, the Electricians Labor Union leader. $700,000 contributed as of the first reporting period.
Right, and that's from a variety of sources, but yeah.
Okay.
Far and away. Another one is David Wecht from Pittsburgh. Very well thought of judge. He also finished second among those with campaign contributions. He had over $500,000. Keep in mind, these are staggering numbers for a primary for the Supreme Court. But he's very well thought of, well-reasoned, high profile, and by all accounts is running really hard. And then another one I would mention is Dwayne Woodruff from Pittsburgh. He's a longtime family court judge, administrative judge there, former Pittsburgh Steeler. And because these things matter, people pay attention to these things.
He was actually played on the Steelers?
He was on the Steel Curtain. He was part of the Steel Curtain.
Wow.
And he was also a member of the Interbranch Commission. I believe he was a member of the Interbranch Commission on Juvenile Justice, which examined the fallout from the Luzerne County Kids for Cash scandal. So he's very well known for his advocacy for kids.
There's been a lot of attention paid to the growing amount of money in judicial races across the country. What are we seeing in Pennsylvania?
Right now, I don't think we've seen any elements of outside contributions. That could change when we get to the general election. Right now, it's mostly in-state money. And look, classically, it's trial lawyers and it's the unions.
And should we be concerned about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, I understand why plaintiffs' lawyers would want to contribute. They want what they see are good judges. But inevitably, it creates a little bit of an appearance issue when they're then bringing these cases before these people and they've contributed such large sums to their campaigns.
So just to be clear, in Pennsylvania, a lawyer can contribute any sum to a candidate. So you could have a justice hearing a case that from someone he's gotten what, $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 from?
Possibly.
It happens.
In
the fall, will Republicans or Democrats have a discernible edge?
You would argue that with our demographics, the way they've shifted in Pennsylvania over the last 15 to 20 years, you would argue the Democrats probably have the voter edge, and they may have an edge because of Allegheny County and Philadelphia. It's really going to come down to I view that the swing is always the suburban counties of Philadelphia because those are the ones that can go either way. I think typically if you look at judicial elections, it typically favors the Pittsburgh candidates regardless of Democrat or Republican. So to some degree, I think it's more of a regional thing than a Republican or Democrat thing.
The Western Pennsylvania candidates do better?
They tend to coalesce around the Pittsburghers. I should have mentioned also Cheryl Lynn Allen, another Republican from Allegheny County who's very well thought of. I think even though she hasn't raised a whole lot of money, I think she will have a strong chance as the other Pittsburgh candidates do as well.
Okay. There are other judicial races. There are other appellate courts and lots of local common pleas court positions up. Help us out as a voter. Where should voters turn for information they can count on?
I think the first thing voters should do is look at both the Pennsylvania Bar Association and their local bar associations. Most bar associations do some form of judicial evaluations commissions. And they do a pretty good job. I mean, I know the Philadelphia Bar Association folks are really invested. They spend a lot of time evaluating the candidates, interviewing them. And there's usually a lot of fairly good information for the average voter to sort of educate yourself on those people. There have been a number of debates already, at least among the Supreme Court, and there may be some debates among the other appellate court races. Pennsylvania's for Modern Courts often has things. The League of Women Voters often has things on their website, we're detailing it. We intend to do as many questionnaires as we can. We'll try to make that available to people as well to sort of educate them about the people.
And people can see the debate sometimes on the Pennsylvania Cable Network.
Correct.
That, right?
Correct.
Okay. And who else recommends judges? The Legal Intelligencer does not endorse.
We do not endorse. We stay independent. I actually once in a column personally endorsed one candidate just because it was Darnell Jones, who was then president judge of the Philadelphia court system, was now on the federal bench. And it was more out of both what I thought was the need of diversity on the Supreme Court, which is something we actually really haven't talked about, And also, I just thought he was a really good man, and he lost. So that shows you what influence I had on that race. So no, we do not. We do not. We want to remain impartial. We want to, you know, focus on the issues.
He is a great judge. I've seen him on the bench in federal court. Diversity. How many minorities serve in the bench in Pennsylvania?
Not many, and especially it's been lacking on our state Supreme Court. We've had two African Americans that I'm aware of, Juanita Kidd Stout and Robert Nix. And since Nix left the court, we haven't seen any. I don't know that we've gotten any closer to having any diversity. And I would argue that we clearly need it. It's something. It's hard, especially in this climate that we're in right now. If you want to have faith in the court, it needs to be reflective of the community. And one of the nice things about this election, at least, is there's at least two African-American candidates that people can kind of take a hard look at. And I would argue that there is a need for that.
And who are they?
Dwayne Woodruff from Allegheny County, the family court judge, and Cheryl Lynn Allen from the state superior court.
Hank Greslak is the associate publisher and regional editor-in-chief for the Legal Intelligencer. Thanks, Hank.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.